from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll chat with biographer Michael Sheldon, who is the winner of the 2014 Indiana Authors Award.
I'll get a preview of this year's Spirit in Place Festival, which has the theme of journey.
And I'll find out how the Central Indiana Dance Ensemble is celebrating its 15th anniversary. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call...
What'll we do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. The 2014 Eugene and Marilyn Glick Indiana Authors Award Dinner was held last weekend at the Central Library, and Professor Michael Sheldon was named as this year's National Author Award winner. Travis DiNicola spoke with Sheldon, who's a biographer, and the first nonfiction writer to win the national award. Joining them in the studio was Laura Wills of the Indianapolis Public Library Foundation.
Laura, Michael, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have you both here.
Good to be here.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. And Michael, let me just start off by saying congratulations to you for being the 2014 Indiana Authors Award winner. That's quite an award.
Yes, and also a mouthful. I think that's what you wanted to say, and it is, but it's nice to have it.
Yeah, it's a wonderful honor, and I've been really fortunate the past few years to always be able to talk with the award winner here on Art of the Matter, and I'm so glad that we're doing that again. Laura, I'm going to actually move to you just briefly to talk a little bit about the Eugene Marilyn Glick Award. This is a really fantastic award that is through the Library Foundation. Tell me a bit more about it.
That's right. This is the sixth year for the Eugene and Marilyn Glick Indiana Authors Award, and it was created as a way just to celebrate the literary landscape here in Indiana, so to honor our Indiana authors and promote a love of reading throughout the state.
And you give actually a number of awards.
We do. We give the National Author Winner, which Michael was the winner this year, a Regional Author Winner. Our winner this year was Norbert Kraft.
Mm-hmm. Great poet.
Our former poet laureate.
Mm-hmm.
An emerging author winner this year was Kelsey Timmerman, announced at the award dinner on October 25th.
Excellent. And that's held at the library, the Central Library in downtown.
That's right. We had about 375 guests attend the award dinner.
Very, very cool. That is such a great event as well. And I know that there's also a lot of ancillary events that are connected to it through the library, through the foundation, with authors doing workshops and signing books and all sorts of things as well.
Yeah, we try to just to make it kind of a full day for writers and book lovers of all ages. We had the Indie Author Fair at Central Library where people could come and do workshops and meet authors and just kind of celebrate literature.
So what sort of awards are we talking about? I mean, other than a great plaque and the honor, there's also a little bit of money involved here.
That's right. Each winner receives a cash prize, and mm-hmm. they also get to designate their hometown Indiana Public Library for a $2,500 grant from the Library Foundation.
So that's pretty cool.
They get an award, and then they get to give back to the communities that inspired their love of writing as well.
I love that part of the award, that they get to pick a library to give back to as well. Because obviously without libraries, we wouldn't have great authors.
That's right. It's very true.
So, Professor Sheldon, it is a real treat to meet you and have a chance to talk with you. I know that you're an IU grad and you teach at Indiana State. You've also had a career that's taken you all over the world, even Baltimore.
Even Baltimore, yes. I've only driven through Baltimore, but I ended up writing for the Baltimore Sun for about 10 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
One day,
you were a book critic there, right?
Yeah. One day I was just offered the job of writing their fiction roundup, take a lot of novels about every other month and, mm-hmm. and try to write about what the latest trends are in fiction. I loved that job. It was great. I also worked for the Daily Telegraph in London, which mm-hmm. was probably my favorite all-time job. It was a great chance to go out and interview people all over the world. If there was someone they wanted me to talk to in Madrid, and I don't mean Illinois, I mean or Missouri, mm-hmm. Madrid, Spain, I would go out there and interview someone, or Rome, or Paris, or wherever, and that was a wonderful job.
Very cool. And you have written a number of biographies, most recently on Winston Churchill, but also Mark Twain and George Orwell, Graham Greene. Really interesting collection of different people, really important people from the 20th century.
Yes, and each time the publishers would...
I guess Mark Twain's a little bit earlier than that.
Well, but, yeah. He's an American, obviously, and that was a bit different for me. Not as an American, I understood that world, but as a writer, I had sort of made my mark doing English figures, British figures.
Mm-hmm.
But all those people were very interesting to write about because the publishers could see that there was a market for them and would encourage me to go in whatever direction I wanted to. And that sort of led me into trying to tell stories that weren't cradle-to-grave biographies but were slice-of-life biographies to give you a sense over, say, 300 or 400 pages,
mm-hmm.
what it would be like to follow a writer or, in the case of Churchill, a young politician over the course of several years and see how their life took shape.
Well, Churchill is the most recent work you've done. I do want to talk about that in a moment, but I'm very interested about your Twain work because it was focused on the last year of Twain's life, correct?
Last 3.5 years when he was the man mm-hmm. in white, when he wore
that famous white suit, right? Mm-hmm. Tell me about that.
Well, everyone thinks that's his signature suit because he wore it for years, but in fact, he wore it only from 1906 until 1910 when he died. And part of the reason was his wife died a few years earlier, and he said, probably the next big funeral will be mine. So he said, I've worn black enough to these funerals. If the next funeral is mine, I want to go out in white. And he wore it almost nonstop. He had something like a whole closet of these things made.
Were they linen? Were they?
Yes, they were for summer, and then wool for winter. And they were lovely.
Yeah.
Creamy white. In the book, I have a two-page spread of a photograph of him in the full outfit with the white shoes, the white socks. He had white hair. It was quite something to see him come down the street.
I would imagine. Now, do any of those suits still exist somewhere? Or?
You know, that's a great question. The question I usually get asked about, is there still something out there, is his voice. Because he knew Edison, and Edison recorded him on these old wax cylinders. And the holy grail of Mark Twain studies is to find one of those wax cylinders.
Yeah.
But it should also be, I suppose, the holy grail for one of those suits.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never seen one.
It would be fantastic to be able to have one of those and see that and such. Was he a big man? I don't know.
No, about 5'9".
Yeah.
For his time, he was average size, really, or a little bit taller than average size. But it's interesting. He was very proud of his weight. He always kept it at about 150. And he did that in part because he smoked, at certain points in his life, up to 20 cigars a day. So... And he didn't eat lunch. I've always told people the Mark Twain diet is you have, here it is, it's true. You have,
okay.
You have a slice of apple pie for breakfast,
mm-hmm.
you skip lunch, and you smoke 20 cigars a day, you'll lose weight.
Well, I could try that. Yeah. I'll let you know how it goes.
Yeah.
And if you see me in a suit, white suit, next time, then you'll know that it's been going okay. So tell me about Churchill. How did you choose to write about Churchill, and tell me about the focus you took with him?
Well, speaking of another great cigar smoker.
Mm-hmm. I see a theme here.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. But I suppose part of it, to be serious for a minute, is it allowed these men to ponder. They both like to ponder questions, think about it, so they could get in this meditative mood, sit over in a nice chair somewhere, smoke their cigar, maybe have something to drink, and come up with great ideas. Great ideas, in Twain's case, for books. Great ideas for the world, in the case of Winston Churchill. I liked that period of Twain's life in the early 20th century, and I wanted to look at that same period from the standpoint of the British, to look across the pond and see how that Edwardian world, as they would have called it, was like. And, you know, the women in their great gowns and their hair piled high on their heads and beautiful people of all kinds. A very glamorous world to describe. At that time, London was the capital of the world.
A world we sort of think of now as Downton Abbey.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And to have Churchill in the middle of that as a young man, very handsome in his 20s, was just, to me, irresistible.
Well, about how old was he in the period that you focus on? The book is titled The Young Titan.
Yeah, he's in his early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
He steps right into Parliament, his first real career. As a politician, he walks straight into Parliament as a young member of Parliament, and he walks out the head of the British Navy. I mean, he rises through the cabinet to just a rank below Prime Minister, and then it all collapses. The First World War breaks out. There are early reversals. He gets blamed for them. His career just collapses, and he's written off.
Really?
From that period. So I wanted to study that first period of fame for Churchill and see how that made the older man who, you know, made his mark in his 60s in World War II.
Hmm. It sounds like a fantastic book.
Yes. That was my idea.
Well, obviously award-winning now. May I ask you what you're working on now?
I've just finished writing a book, actually, on another kind of making of, but this isn't the making of a person. Mm-hmm. This is the making of a great book. It's the making of Moby Dick.
Mm. It's one of my favorites.
It's the story of how Melville, a really young, he was only 31 when he wrote that book, a really young man decides to write this amazing story. It's called, some people have called it our national epic.
Yeah.
But it certainly launched a great chain of coffee shops. Because the first mate's name, Starbuck, has taken off in a way that poor Melville could not have imagined.
And certainly didn't get the royalties for.
No, but it shows the cultural phenomenon of this book. So I think it's the kind of thing that most people would like, I hope, to know more about how a great book gets written and what happened to the author during the writing of it. It was very dramatic.
I think one of the saddest things is that, I mean, Melville never really got to experience hearing the praise that the book has received since.
It's almost a parallel to the story I wrote with Churchill in the sense that he's on a rise and he thinks this book, Moby Dick, will make it for good. He'll be the most famous writer in the world. And in fact, it crashes.
Yeah.
And it's worse for him because he never recovers from that.
Yeah.
He lives another 40 years. And in those 40 years, he's more and more obscure to the point where he becomes a customs officer in New York just to survive, just a job. And the first day of work, he shows up, and the man at the office looks up at him, recognizes it was the once famous novelist Herman Melville, and says to him, "What are you doing here?"
Yeah.
And I suppose Melville would ask himself that question for the next 20 years because he worked at that job.
Well, and one of the most, I think, tragic things about the story was when the book was first published in the United States, if I'm getting this right, it didn't include the final chapter. And so the book was really dismissed by a lot of critics.
You know your Melville. Yes, in fact, it was more that it was really the case that in England they cut off the epilogue, which explains why Ishmael can tell the story. You know, the famous opening of that book is "Call Me Ishmael."
Yes.
And so he's the narrator. But you assume if you don't have that epilogue that he went down with the whaling ship.
Yeah.
But in fact, he survives. And the British cut off that epilogue.
The British, excuse me.
And they were the first to review the book. So the early reviews, which appeared over here, you know, often, this is shocking, people won't read your whole book. They'll read the early parts. So they would read the early parts of the book, read the British reviews, make up their mind that it was a bad book because somehow there was this huge mistake.
Yeah.
And of course, that was not true at all.
Well, I am looking forward to reading that book when it comes out.
I'll tell my publishers. They'll like that.
And we'll have you back on the air to talk about that.
Thank you.
I want to turn it back just for a moment to Laura from the Library Foundation. Can you talk a little bit about how Professor Sheldon was selected this year? We were talking about this a little bit before. There have been other nonfiction authors who've been honored by the award, but for the national award, the biggest award, through the Eugene and Marilyn Glick Indiana Authors Award, this is the first time that we've had a nonfiction writer.
That's right. We have a statewide award panel who choose the winners of the award, and they have come from all around the state and have a broad range of professional backgrounds. But everyone really enjoyed Michael's books for the fact that they were so well researched, but still almost read like novels. They're very enjoyable to read. And I think you've had a chance to listen to him for a while. He's wonderful at telling stories. And
absolutely.
So he takes this piece of history and just weaves a story around it. So our award panel really appreciated that and wanted to recognize those books.
Well, that's excellent. Very good. Well, Professor Sheldon, thank you so much for coming in to Art of the Matter today. It's been a real pleasure. And again, congratulations to you on winning the 2014 Indiana Authors Award.
Thank you very much.
And Laura, thank you very much for coming in again.
Thank you.
Travis DiNicola with Professor Michael Sheldon, winner of this year's National Author Award as part of the Eugene and Marilyn Glick Indiana Authors Award. Also joining them in the studio was Laura Wills of the Library Foundation. You can get more information about the author awards at indianaauthorsaward.org. Information about Professor Sheldon can be found at michaelsheldon.com. Michael, typical spelling, S-H-E-L-D-E-N.com. S-H-E-L-D-E-N.com. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
This year's Spirit in Place Festival theme is Journey. And Sharon Gamble recently invited festival director Pam Blevins-Henkel and event selection committee member Beth Perdue-Outland in to learn what sets this festival apart.
Not surprising to have Pamela Blevins-Henkel here to talk about Spirit in Place. Beth Perdue-Outland, how did you get involved?
Well, I've been a Spirit in Place fan forever.
Yeah.
And then I was fortunate enough to get involved with the event selection committee a few years ago, and now I chair that committee. It's a great opportunity. I learned things about the city I never would have learned in any other capacity.
For instance?
Well, for instance, the applications that we see each year have such inventive collaboration sort of across sectors and mediums that you see, you know, arts and culture organizations collaborating with, you know, religious institutions and universities and restaurants. And
you're like, how did they know each other, right?
Exactly. So Spirit in Place serves as a tremendous gathering place for the unexpected.
What's the hardest part about being on that event selection committee?
I'd have to say the hardest part is discerning what people have written from what you think their intent is.
Uh-huh.
You know, because you look at the applications and it's so easy to get excited about the ideas and see the possibilities. But have the applicants really demonstrated that they have thoroughly thought out this event and that it's going to be an extraordinary experience for the person who chooses to attend?
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes you go, wow, I believe in this idea, but they haven't really shown me that they've thought it all the way through. So the temptation to do program therapy, I would say, is the biggest challenge.
That is absolutely the truth.
Program therapy.
Program therapy.
I love it. So, Pam, obviously you're very cautious about who sits on that committee.
Absolutely.
What's that process like? How do you find the representatives for that committee?
Well, we work very hard at getting a cross-section of the community on there. Most of the people, the thing that they have in common is that they're fantastic programmers themselves,
mm-hmm.
like Beth. They know how to design a good program. They understand the audience experience, and they also are very tuned into what Spirit in Place is trying to accomplish in the community with these events. And then after that, we're looking for a cross-section of representatives from the arts, various art forms, from different faith communities, from other civic and educational sectors. We're looking at age differences, and that really, you know, is big when it comes to programming. Folks who are more my age don't mind sitting in a room for an hour and a half listening to somebody talk. Younger audiences are less excited about that. So we have to have some age diversity, some ethnic and racial diversity, gender diversity. We're really looking at the whole gamut. It's actually kind of tough. We've got 12 people or so on that committee and getting the right mix. And also some people who have deep history with Spirit in Place, but then also some people who have less history and who are newer and can bring some fresh perspective and insight, so we don't, you know, have the same people all the time. So we have to give a very careful thought to who's on that committee, but they do a fantastic job every year. It's one of my favorite meetings, actually. I don't get to talk because my opinion does not count at all in that meeting, but it's so wonderful to hear them wrestle with the ideas and to talk about what's happening in the city. There are also people who are really, you know, tuned in to all the different sectors and the trends in the community and what's happening. And so what's very invigorating about it is that they rarely agree with one another.
That's what's exciting. It's a room where you have permission to throw your opinions out there. And in fact, that's the expectation. And we wrestle with the different perspective, which is great because I think everybody in that room learns something. And the role is really a curatory role where we want to have a festival where lots of different segments of our city can look at that and see themselves connecting with it.
That's exactly right. And what's powerful for me is that that committee then is really living out the mission of Spirit in Place in a very specific way. If our mission is to catalyze civic engagement through collaborations among the arts, humanities, and religion, by gum, that is exactly what's happening in that meeting. And it's not always easy.
Sure.
It is always, though, respectful. And a very vigorous dialogue. It takes all day, usually, to review all those and discuss them after they've been ranked by the committee. But, you know, every single year, this is my 9th festival, the end result is really a tremendous array of programming for very wide interests and tastes and experience.
And, you know, you mentioned having new people, people with fresh eyes who maybe don't speak the lingo of the Spirit in Place Festival yet. And that lingo has been in place for, this is your ninth, and mm-hmm. how many, what
19th,
year?
19th. 19th.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's hard to imagine. I remember the first one.
Right.
In the last 9 years, what's changed the most?
Ooh. In the last 9 years, we've done a lot of work trying to attract younger audiences. Mm-hmm. And so I think we have greater intentionality around that. I think one thing that's changing that's interesting, and we don't have an answer to this yet. We recently had an evaluation done about Spirit in Place. And some of the findings had to do with the different perceptions about the religious elements within the festival, mm-hmm. And how those perceptions are different among age groups. So
really?
The older generations really valued the presence of faith-based programming in the festival, in that civic stage. And the younger audiences found value in it, but were more uncomfortable with it. So I think what's one of the my perceptions about that is that I know a lot of people who, younger people, who live lives of great value. They have lots of values, but they don't use the language of religion necessarily mm-hmm. to talk about their values. So that's something interesting for Spirit in Place to think about as we move forward. You know, there's a population of people who are going to church less, and how we live out those values of forgiveness and compassion and love and service, which have traditionally been taught through religion, but not exclusively. So how we language that for the festival for future iterations and generations is something for us to wrestle with.
So what in one person's vocabulary might be religion, and in another's it might be faith, and in another person might just think of it as community values.
Exactly.
So how interesting that the festival becomes not just its own entity with, in this year's case, 38 events.
Mm-hmm.
Good Lord, more than three dozen events to juggle on your end, and more than three dozen events for the lucky public to choose from on my end. But it does become at least a snapshot, if not something deeper, in the way of a picture of what's happening in our community, how our community looks, feels, evolves at any given place. And I'm intrigued by how that might be captured, because 10 years from now, 50 years from now, somebody might be really might really benefit from understanding what our crossroads was at that in 2014, for example.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that you see that in the variety of events that are spread across the festival. I mean, Spirit in Place provides a safe space to explore some really challenging topics together. In fact, there is an event called Awkward Conversations that is about having awkward conversations about race and ethnicity and other issues. If you look at events like Out of Chaos Hope, which is specifically dealing with what are the issues of gun violence in our city, what leads to it, what are the results of it, how do we proactively address issues of gun violence in the city? You know, so there are places where really heady, important, serious issues are being discussed. And then there are some other events that are whimsical and fun and about exploring, you know, the fun aspects of journey. Like, I love one called Separate Ways, travel stories, karaoke, and Chinese food.
One people, of these things is not like the others.
Right. People doing 9-minute travel logs. People also then bringing their pictures of the best unexpected places in Indianapolis that other people don't know about. And there's going to be karaoke to Journey songs. Just
yeah.
to make sure we're right there with the theme. And so Spirit in Place provides this incredible multifaceted opportunity. Like, you can go to experience something really like serious and thought-provoking that makes you want to, you know, take action and become civically engaged one day. And then you can come go sing karaoke, because all of those things are important to a robust community.
Absolutely. I think this is actually one of the magical things about Spirit in Place, is that it, you know, it does reflect at any moment what we're caring about, what we're worrying about, what we want to do, the fun we want to have, the way we see ourselves in the past and today, and what we're hoping for the future. I think it's one of the most powerful things that the festival can offer. And, you know, we haven't, and it would be so interesting to go back and look at the array of events each year and kind of study what we were thinking about ourselves, you know, and what was going on. Your questions really provoked something interesting there for me to reflect on, Sharon. I know that going back to 2010, when our theme was food, was right when the whole food thing was just exploding here in central Indiana. Urban gardening and new restaurants and all the
slow
things
food.
Going slow food and all that was really becoming a hot trend here. So it would be fascinating to go back and look to see how the festival sort of maps what's going on in central
I'm
Indiana.
I'm sensing a 25th anniversary project. I'm not going to sick you on it for 20 because that's only a year away.
Right. I think it would be a great project, actually.
One of the things you want to have happen is for people who wouldn't necessarily be in the same room together to meet.
Yes.
What are some of the sessions where you think that's especially going to happen this year? Candidates from either of you.
Well, I think there are actually a number of them. One of the great things about Spirit in Place is that, I mean, I've lived in this city my entire adult life, and every year with Spirit in Place, I experience something new, something I didn't know existed. You know, last year for the first time, I was at the Major Taylor Velodrome, you know, and that's what's extraordinary is even if you are an active and busy resident in the city, there are new facets to explore, and our city's always changing, so you can learn what those are. One of the events that's sort of near and dear to my heart is called Celebrations. And it's going to take place at Broadway United Methodist Church. And it's a collaboration between the Metropolitan Youth Orchestra, Freetown Village, Ibotta Dance Company, and visual artist Carol White. And they're going to explore the poetry of Mari Evans and the poem Celebrations through all of their different mediums. Now, these are four African-American women who've had extraordinary life journeys that have led them to commit themselves to inspiring the next generation of young people. And so they're going to explore that poem through each of their art forms, visual art, theater, music, dance. And they're going to interpret the poem in a very traditional way. And then at the end of the program, they're going to interpret the poem through the hip-hop vocabulary to show how things evolve but maintain their relevance.
But stay the same.
And so where would you find, you know, the director of the Metropolitan Youth Orchestra, which is a classical orchestra serving young people in our community, and hip-hop artist Tony Sticks. Well, you find it at Spirit in Place at Broadway United Methodist Church. Who knew?
Yeah, that's a fantastic event. I think another event that where different people might congregate is one called Debating Our Progress, where debate teams from IUPUI and Butler are going to grapple with the question about, do we have more access and opportunity here in Indianapolis than we did 20 years ago? So I think that question will appeal to lots of different people, and I'll be so interested to hear what those debate teams have to say about that. That's a program that the Neighborhood Resource Center is going to do. Another program that I think will be very interesting along those lines is called Spirit Slam. This is a really innovative thing that the Christian Theological Seminary is doing. That's going to be spoken word performances, poetry, dramatic reading, rap, storytelling, that's going to showcase the artistic relationship to sacred texts that have to do with journey. And that's actually a competitive event. People are invited to upload a video on YouTube, and then the finalists will be picked for a grand performance in the Shelton Auditorium at CTS. So those are just a few of the samples. I think what is not only interesting is the substance of the programs, but where those programs happen. And I think sometimes the locations are just as appealing. I think this festival gives people this chance to go to a side of town they haven't been to.
Sure.
Or if they have never been to Broadway United Methodist Church, right. And they will go there.
It gives them an excuse.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I know that we hear that feedback from people who go, that it really is an opportunity to understand their city better physically. And I think we have 30 different venues for the 38 programs this year.
Sharon Gamble with Spirit in Place Festival Director Pam Blivens-Hinkle and Event Selection Committee Member Beth Perdue-Outland. The free public conversation will be at Christian Theological Seminary's Shelton Auditorium on Sunday, November 16th at 4 p.m. Called Journey's End, it will feature Gail Sheehy, author of Passages and Passages in Caregiving, Turning Chaos into Confidence. Also, two-time cancer survivor and New York Times number one best-selling author and poet, Mark Nepo, as well as Dr. Timothy E. Quill, director of the Center for Ethics and Humanities, University of Rochester School of Medicine. The speakers will discuss multiple dimensions of death and dying, such as caregiving, aging, physician-assisted suicide, policy implications, and more, as well as the impact on individual, family, and community life. Many of the Spirit in Place Festival events are free, some have a nominal charge, and they are all over town. So chart your festival journey at spiritandplace.org. That's Spirit and Place, spiritandplace.org.
Travis?
Yes, Sharon.
People who are hearing our show this week are going to be in one of two stages of chocolate consumption.
And costume wearing, and costume I would imagine, wearing. Too.
They're
I mean,
either
if you're listening
be,
Thursday
yeah,
night.
Yeah, you're eagerly anticipating.
Mm-hmm, or and, Saturday morning, it's the crash.
Yeah, it's like, oh my gosh, I ate too much chocolate. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, either way, we have events you can go out and do to burn off some of those calories on our calendar we call
What'll We Boo? Oh, I love doing
We're
that at Halloween each year, you know. Well, I do want to mention, if you are listening Thursday night and you're wondering about where to go trick-or-treating with your kids on Friday, then please consider the Safe Night Halloween Trunk or Treat on Friday night in the Dow Agro Sciences Celebration Park at the Indiana State Fairgrounds. It is from 5 to 7 p.m. It's free for kids 12 and younger. They must be accompanied by an adult. And it's a really cool way to enjoy a very safe trick-or-treating for Halloween. Definitely worth checking out.
And you got to check out all those decorated trunks, too, which means people had to clean out their trunks so they could decorate them.
And you can stick around later for one of the Indy Fuel hockey game matches things.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like it.
Sure. Why not?
I like it. Hey, just a reminder, you heard about this recently on the Art of the Matter, Art on Music, that new collaboration among 18 artists from 7 states and Bosma Enterprises, which is going to be on view at the Saul Center.
Oh, that's the
Saul Center.
Yeah, that's off of Michigan, which
yep.
is the old senior center.
Indeed, that's mm-hmm. exactly where it is. And all of the artwork features musical instruments, either in whole or in part. And you can learn more at bosma.org/artonmusic. That's coming up in a couple weeks, but make your plans early because it's not going to be there very long. Bosma, bosma.org/artonmusic.
Well, while I'm chatting about things going on at the State Fairgrounds, next week you might want to consider going to the Christmas Gift and Hobby Show. It
Yikes.
Starts on the 5th. It goes through the 9th. It's in the West Pavilion. That's right, Sharon. It is
one holiday to the
it's
next.
It's holiday time. We're jumping right into it. Also, though, the Great Indie Pet Expo is going on in Exposition yeah. Hall the same weekend as Christmas Gift and Hobby Show. So if you get confused, well, that's you'll figure it out. And then Junior League Holiday Mart. That's yet another holiday show. That's the 13th through the 16th at the State Fairgrounds. And that's always a great time, too.
Well, I'm going to toss us back to the Boys of Summer for a minute because...
Okay, I'm getting all of the holidays.
Okay, you're doing the holidays. Okay, well, World Series is an official holiday, right?
Of course, yeah.
But through November 15th at the Indiana History Center, you can see Hoosiers win the pennant, Indiana Roots of American Baseball. You know, I love that we Hoosiers claim to have invented just about everything. But you can get caught up in playoff history style at the Indiana History Center. And again, that is on display through November 15th. It's included with your Indiana Experience admission.
You know, I'll give you some baseball history here. The first time that a curveball was actually recorded scientifically took place in Irvington,
what?
In the Irvington neighborhood. Yeah, with pieces of butcher block paper and talcum powder to show that the ball actually changed its trajectory, and a curveball was proven to exist here happened here first, Sharon.
Who was responsible for that? That's so fun.
Pretty cool idea, huh?
I love it.
A butcher and a baseball player with a lot of time on their hands.
Apparently.
And some talcum
powder. Wonder you live in Irvington.
There you go. Hey, next weekend, or this weekend, I guess, actually, really, it's opening right now as we speak. Georgia O'Keeffe is coming up. This is, I know you're excited about this,
I'm
Sharon.
I'm very excited about
this. So it actually officially opens November 2nd. If you're a member, there are preview days ahead of time this weekend, but it officially opens on the 2nd and runs through February 15th. This is a huge show of Georgia O'Keeffe's work, and it is going to be a lot of fun. I know you're a fan.
I'm a big fan. The Georgia O'Keeffe Museum, which is small but worthy in Santa Fe, is it was I got on their e-list and planned a trip around it. So see, art is powerful. I'm just saying.
Absolutely.
Hey, if you're thinking, well, okay, let's leave Halloween behind and do something that's not quite Christmas yet, how about going to hear Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, as well as the Overture to the Creatures of Prometheus? That is what is on the docket for the Carmel Symphony Orchestra on Saturday, November 8th at 7:30. Saturday, November 8th at 7:30.
So this is the last weekend to see the Terracotta Warriors before they march back to China. they are at the Children's Museum, of course, through the end of the day on November 2nd. So this is our last chance to see those Terracotta Warriors, which is going to be a lot of fun. And you know what? One thing, though, I want, and it's a gorgeous exhibit, and it's very cool and definitely worth going to and taking your kids to. But if perhaps you don't have the time, or you know, you don't want to deal with the crowds, there is a beautiful terracotta warrior on the 6th floor, I believe it is, of the Central Library right now.
That's the Children's Museum.
Loan them, and it's really cool. And you know what? If you can't get to the whole exhibit, at least check out the one at the library.
And then you can go look for some books about the Terracotta Warriors.
And then watch them march off.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Indeed. Hey, the flute is sometimes called the oldest and sweetest instrument known to mankind, and the flute is the star of a concert that is coming up by Ensemble Voltaire on November 20th and 23rd. Flutist Barbara Kalauer is going to be featured in a luscious program of duos, trios, and quartets, along with string playing colleagues as well as fellow flutist Lila Breithoff. You can find out more at indiebaroque.org. IndieBaroque.org for more information about that concert.
Cool. Hey, a couple weeks ago when I was talking with some of those guys from Primary Colors, one of them was Martin Kuntz, who's an awesome artist, and his show Monkeys with Guns, which has been in the Primary Colors Gallery down in Fountain Square, is coming to a close on Friday night, Halloween. And so if you're looking for something a little bit different and artsy to do on Halloween, you might want to consider going to the closing reception and artist talk and Halloween bash from 6 to 10. They're going to have beer and costumes, and Martin's going to be talking about his work, and it is going to be a full holiday party. I would encourage, you know, 21 and over for this one.
That sounds wise.
Yeah. It should be a lot of fun. But Monkeys with Guns, Martin Kuntz, down in Fountain Square at Primary Colors.
Love it. Booth Tarkington Civic Theater is featuring a voice that you hear a lot on WFYI, especially on our TV side, that distinctive voice that tells you what time and what day you can hear your favorite, I'm a radio person, aren't I? See and hear your favorite TV programming is none other than Mickey Mathiodakis, who has a whole separate career as an actress, and she's reprising her role as Golda Meir in Golda's Balcony.
Oh, wow. She'd be great in
that. And she's actually a better age for it now. She did it years ago with a lot of makeup, but she's it's a wonderful one-woman show and great role for her. And it's up on stage at Booth Tarkington Civic Theater through Saturday, November 8th, so you better scoot and get your ticket fast.
And that will be a terrific show. Mm-hmm. Great performance by her, I'm sure. Well, as we're speaking of theater up in Carmel, then I'll also mention Actors Theater of Indiana, which is also located up at the Center for the Performing Arts. They work out of the studio theater up there. They are doing Pete and Keeley. It's a string of hits, a cast of two, sort of Forever Plaid meets I do. How can you miss
that? I like
that?
The way you said that.
Thank you. So it opens up on November 7th, runs through the 23rd, and it will be a lot of fun, a lot of great music, sort of like a variety shows from the 60s and early 70s, with a lot of fun songs, sort of in a TV style, kind of like Steve and Edie meet Sonny and Cher, and a little Carol Lawrence and Robert Goulet, and there you go.
ago.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. It's Pete and Keeley.
I think there'll be some jabs in the ribs. I'm just guessing.
Ouch.
Hey, a really fascinating artist called John Zawara, who lived from 1880 to 1951, was diagnosed with schizophrenia, and that landed him in what was then called the Central Indiana Hospital for the Insane in 1938. But he did these amazing artworks and really is known as kind of a breakthrough artist, and the Indiana Medical History Museum is devoting a whole day's worth of programming, a whole afternoon's worth of programming anyway, to John Zawara on Sunday, November 9th. You can hear Rachel Perry, the former fine arts curator of the Indiana State Museum, talk about his artwork. There is a practicing clinician and professor of art therapy named Juliet King, who's going to place Zawara's story in the context of the development of art therapy throughout the 20th century. And as they say, much, much more, including you can tour the Medical History Museum. So to find out more, go to eventbrite.com and type in John Zawara, Z-W-A-R-A, or Indiana Medical History Museum. It's $5 and a fascinating afternoon. Again, that's coming up Sunday, November 9th.
Sounds great. Hey, you know what I love, Sharon, in a theater title? I love a title that tells me exactly what I'm about to see, and that is what is going on at the Phoenix Theater with the show Old Jews Telling Jokes. Yeah, so you know what? It's exactly what you expect it to be, and it's open now and is running through November 23rd, and it is funny, 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 and well, there you go. That's the title, Old Jews Telling Jokes. That's really all you need to know.
And feel free to send us or the Phoenix your favorite joke. A man walks into a bar. There might be a penguin. There might be a cat. Who knows? Hey, the Indiana Wine Trail, if you're like, oh, I need to like do something a little healthier than candy now.
Yeah.
This weekend, the Indiana Wine Trail is celebrating its 7th annual Fall Haul.
There should still be some good leaves out, right?
I was just in southern Indiana a couple days ago, and there are still some great leaves. The event runs 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. All the wineries are doing something a little bit different. You can get full details at IndianaWineTrail.com. IndianaWineTrail.com. That's this very weekend.
Of course. Wow. So, you know, all I can say with that, Sharon, is trick or treat.
Trick or treat. And send us your extra chocolate, and we'll be back next. We need to tell them how to find out more.
That's right. If you want to learn more about local arts events, you can always do so at indiearts.org/guy, the Arts Council of Indianapolis's Indie Arts Guide. And we will be back next week with more on
What Do We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
The Carmel-based Central Indiana Dance Ensemble is celebrating its 15th anniversary with a new theme for the ensemble's annual gala. Night at the Bar, of course, B-A-R-R-E, is a fundraiser which supports local dance students. Travis DiNicola spoke with the CIDE's artistic director, Susan DeLay.
Susan, welcome back to Art of the Matter. Always great to see you.
It's great to be back. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. And congratulations on 15 years of the Central Indiana Dance Ensemble. That's fantastic.
Well, thank you very much. Excited to be here.
Yeah. So how are you celebrating it?
Well, we've got a lot of things planned for our 15th anniversary. We're continuing with our main stage performances of mm-hmm. Nutcracker, and we do a mixed rep. And then this year we're presenting Cinderella, which was actually the first full-length ballet outside of Nutcracker that we did when the company first started. So that's kind of a celebration in that.
Very cool.
The other exciting news for us is that the company was selected by the Gerald Arpino Robert Joffrey Foundation to perform one of their pieces choreographed by Gerald Arpino, and it's entitled Birthday Variations. So it's kind of a nice celebratory ballet to go along with our 15th anniversary.
And when's that going to be performed?
Actually, it's going to be performed on March 1st at our mixed rep, but we've also been invited by Butler University with Butler Ballet to perform with them on February 15th for their midwinter program, which is a Sunday. Because they have an Arpino piece, too. So it'll be a nice little Arpino program.
Yeah, that's a great opportunity for your students as well.
It is very, very much.
So tell me about A Night at the Bar, because this is your fundraiser with a new twist, a new name. It's going to be a very fun event, I'm sure.
It is. We're really excited this year. You're right. It has a new little twist. Night at the Bar is our annual fundraiser. A little play on words to incorporate having a nice time with the pairings of wine and beer with the ballet bar.
Mm-hmm.
We've got some special
as
guests.
As in B-A-R-R-E.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
We have some special guests that will be performing alongside of our company, which will be the Indianapolis Children's Choir will be joining us, and also the Carmel High School Camerata Symphony.
Oh, very fun. That's cool.
Yes.
Now, this is going to be in Carmel at the Design Center, right?
Yes, it is, and we're excited about our new location. It should be a very exciting night, a fun night. We've got great silent auction items to go along with the wonderful performances by the youth of Carmel.
And the proceeds from this provide scholarships for dancers as well as other support? Is that right?
Yes. We like to use a lot of the proceeds from this for our dancers, but it also helps to continue our outreach programs that we do within the community, also providing the venues and the opportunities for our dancers to continue their dance education.
Sure. So tell me, what makes Central Indiana Dance Ensemble special?
Well, we are a pre-professional youth company with about performing members of about 57.
Okay.
We do a lot of different things. We give back to our community. We perform on our main stage. We enjoy what we do. And for the learning tool for the kids, we bring in outside choreographers.
Yeah.
Just like being able to be seen by one of the Arpino Foundation members when we were performing up in Chicago, and she approached me about being able to set the piece on our company. So that was quite an honor and an unexpected honor.
Now, is it primarily ballet, or you also have some other classes and styles? Or?
We do different venues. We do jazz, modern, and a little tap. But our primary is ballet. As a performing company, we perform classical ballet and contemporary ballet.
So tell me about your Nutcracker, because I know you have one of those coming up. Everyone does,
yes.
Right?
Yes. Our 15th annual Nutcracker will be, again, presented at the Zionsville Performing Arts Center December 12th through the 14th.
Okay.
We will, we are in collaboration with the Indianapolis Children's Choir. So they will
That's a great partnership.
Oh, it's fabulous. And it's just made our production a little bit more live music-ish. Unfortunately, it's very hard to have any symphonies.
Oh, sure.
You know, to be able to play with the ballets anymore. And so it lends itself a little live music with our CDs. And we're just excited again to have them. And they're very excited to be with us. We may have some little special guests prior to the performance, entertaining our audience members as they wait to enter the theater.
Very good. That'll be very fun. So now the Night at the Bar, I do want to mention that again, because that is coming up next weekend, Saturday the 8th. And I know that there are a limited number of tickets, but people have to get them right now.
Yes, they do.
Yes, they do. So if they want to come to that event and enjoy some wine and beer and food, who are some of the food vendors? Is it catered, or is it a mix of different food, or what type of stuff should people expect?
It's catered.
Okay. So really great food, of
course. Yes, great food and pairings, and pairing different food types with different types of beer and wine, and having your palate challenged and see what you like with what type of foods, what wines go with what type of foods. So it's kind of a little education, too, I think.
Will the performances take place sort of throughout the evening, or is there one set time? I'm just trying to sort of picture what the evening's
going
to be like.
They'll be going on throughout the evenings.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So people will be sort of walking around.
Enjoying some of the art from the Art and Design District. Mm-hmm. Will be on display there. And walk around, view things, see our silent auction items.
Sounds
good. Silent auction items. We've got some great things. We have a trip to Cancun.
Excellent.
So that would be wonderful to win, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
As it's getting into winter time.
As we're starting to think about that.
Exactly.
Well, very good, very good. Well, it sounds like a lot of great stuff going on at Central Indiana Dance Ensemble as you're celebrating your 15th anniversary. Again, congratulations to you on that.
Well, thank you so much.
And I hope you have a great season.
Thank you.
Travis DiNicola with the Central Indiana Dance Ensemble's Artistic Director, Susan DeLay. For more information about their Night at the Bar fundraiser or the school, visit cidedance.org. Again, cidedance.org.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Bocelli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m., when I'll learn about a new exhibit and sale of Native American and Western art at the Idle Jar.
I'll find out how the Heron Art Library became the only U.S. library to house a permanent art collection honoring Iraq's literary history.
And I'll get a sneak preview of Dr. Jim Glass's talk about architecture in Greece and Turkey. And we'll have that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.